Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. As the LGBT community and their allies celebrate the progress that's been made over the last 50 years throughout the month of June, they will always remember that the Orlando shooter chose a gay club as his target. San Francisco Pride, which will take place on June 26th, is one of the biggest events of its kind in the country. Nearly 1 million people are expected to attend, and security, obviously, is expected to be very tight. To coincide with Pride events in the Bay Area, Frameline, the largest and longest-running LGBTQ film festival, will honor the victims of the Orlando shooting before tonight's opening night film at the Castro Theater in San Francisco at 7 o'clock. Frameline was born out of a political climate that demanded visibility during a time when the LGBTQ community was made invisible. And that remains as strong and relevant in today's contentious social and political climate as it was in the past. Among its 155 films this year, Frameline will showcase diverse stories of queer youth, of their resilience and the power of love in their lives. And joining me today to talk about the film festival and recent events are three guests. Alexis Whitman is the Director of Distribution and Educational Programming for Frameline. Alexis oversees three of Frameline's programs, including Youth in Motion, a national initiative to send free LGBTQ films to gay-straight alliances across the country. And Alexis was the curator of the Coming Up Queer Shorts program. It'll be on Sunday, June 19th, 1 o'clock at the Roxy. And you can find more information about that at yourcallradio.org. And Alexis joins me in studio. Hi, Alexis. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, good morning.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Joey Gonzalez Ruiz. Joey works with Out Loud, a project of youth radio. Joey identifies as a trans Latino guy who works to build a safer community for queer youth in Oakland. And Joey also joins me in studio. Hi, Joey. Thank you for coming in. Mm-hmm.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
And Jimmy Zhang was raised in the Bayview, recently graduated from UC Berkeley, and now works for SFUSD, the school district, as a community health outreach worker at Burton High. Jimmy supports implementing LGBTQ programs at Burton High School. Hi, Jimmy. Thank you for calling in.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So we booked the show before the shootings happened, and I just want to ask all of you, what are your thoughts on the conversations that are happening right now? I mean, because of social media, everybody has to have an opinion before we even have the facts. So, Alexis, let's start off with you. What are your thoughts on the conversations that are happening? What do you think's missing?
You know, I think that the great thing about social media is that everyone does get to have an opinion and everyone does get to have community. So those of us who are in the Bay Area and maybe are really immersed in queer community, we can hang out with our friends, we can go to the bar, we can talk about it, we can process. But people in other regions and people who don't have our opportunities, they're really using that, and I think that's really great. But then, of course, as you mentioned, there's a negative side to social media, which is that sometimes people go off on tangents on issues that aren't necessarily the big picture. Here, you know, I know that one thing that comes up amongst my friends in their posts is supporting the LGBTQ friends that you have. You know, if you're an ally, step up for those people. It's they're experiencing this really differently than a lot of straight folks and allies are, because it's very personal. And you know, a lot of people come to Pride. A lot of straight people and allies come to Pride, and we're so happy that they do. But you know, please take note of sort of what your friends who are closer to it need. And secondly, I think another thing that comes up is who the shooter chose, right? He chose a gay club. He also chose Latino night at that club. Most of the folks who died were Latino folks. And, you know, we can't lose parts of the narrative and talk about just one issue when we talk about something this large and this tragic. So I think, generally listening to the sort of diversity of perspectives.
Mm. Joey, what about you? What would you add?
For me personally, I'm 18 years old. I am the same age as the youngest victim in the Orlando shooting. So for me, it's a lot of what this could have been me. It's a lot of this could have been my best friends. And because I'm also Latino, we don't really have these conversations in our households. We don't talk about the fact that you are genderqueer, lesbian, gay, whatever. We don't talk about these things because it's more of a private thing. So how do I go up and talk to my family on Facebook or in person how I'm feeling, how deeply affected I am about it. So that's one of the issues that I see as important. I also feel like we're ignoring a lot of the intersectionality that goes into, like, the victims that the shooter chose. You know, he did pick Latinx night as the night he was going to go shoot up a gay club. There was a reason for that. He's been going there for years now. He knew exactly what he was doing, and yet we can't just say he chose a gay club just because they were gay, and we can't say he chose Latinx night just because they were Latinx. He chose both of these things for a reason.
How do you think that's changing the conversation? I read a piece in the New York Times yesterday about how a large number of the young people who were killed were from Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And there is a very strong Puerto Rican community in Florida. Mm-hmm. And that's all the entire community is talking about this now, from the barbershop to the video store to the restaurant. People are really talking about this. And a lot of people quoted in the piece said exactly what you said. It's hard for some families to discuss it, but now it's front and center. And that's what the entire community is talking about.
I feel like it's tragic that we had to have something like this happen for us to have these conversations mm-hmm. in our homes. It's tragic that some of these people actually had to be outed to their families because of this tragedy.
Right.
And I feel like we still need to be having these conversations no matter what the situation is. We need to talk to our families about what it is to be LGBT, because we're always at risk of something happening to us, especially if we're people of color. We're always at risk of something like this happening to us, and we need to talk about this. We need to make sure we have safe spaces for our families, for our friends.
We're going to talk about media coverage on tomorrow's show, but right now, with international media focused on this issue, what do you want them to spend more time on?
I want them to spend more time on focusing on the fact that it was both a homophobic attack and it was also an attack on people of color. But I also don't want them to think that it's an Islamic attack. It was an attack by ISIS. You can't blame Muslim people for what happened when there are queer Muslim people. We need to focus on the fact that just because he was Muslim, it doesn't mean that he's acting for all Muslim people. And we can't blame all Muslim people for this as well.
And Jimmy, why don't you jump in here? What are your thoughts on the coverage, the attention that this is getting, and what's missing?
Yeah, I think the important thing to also remember is the background that this person was coming in to. I think this person is very presenting as this very hyper-masculine person, and I think that it's also important to broaden the view that a lot of the victims and people who are out there or who don't pass as this cisgender a straight person, that how much there's also this vulnerability piece, and that we need to be talking about how people express their gender and how people express themselves publicly and visibly is a very inherently political act, mm-hmm. especially for a lot of queer people of color. And so I think it's important to think about the intersections of also as mentioned before, the intersectionalities of how people exist and how people present themselves is inherently political. Mm. And that we need to be protecting folks, especially folks who are non-binary, who may identify as more feminine of center or masculine of center, who don't fit those traditional understandings of gender. Mm.
And Jimmy, can you explain cisgender for people who aren't familiar with it?
Yeah. So to my understanding, cisgender means that the assigned gender that matches your sex at birth is what you perform or associate with. Mm-hmm. So if you're born as a male with a penis and you continue, or not just with a penis, sorry, it's just if you're born assigned at birth as a male and you fit in what society gives you as expectations of what is a male, and you fit into that and you present yourself as a man, you pass as a man, then you'd be considered cisgender.
This shooting happened just about a week before so many events. were about to take place in June for Pride Month. The Chronicle had a piece yesterday about police presence is going to be huge for obvious reasons because Pride on June 26th is one of the biggest in the country. About 1 million people are expected to attend. I bet it'll be even bigger because people will come out to express solidarity. And then Frameline, I was reading a statement by the executive director, Alexis, and it said, we're going to continue. We want to create a safe space. We are probably going to have increased security. What are those conversations like behind the scenes?
You know, our operations team and our executive director, they're working on it, you know, in terms of logistics, meeting with SFPD, meeting with other LGBT orgs that are going through the same thing this time of year. So, you know, there's sort of the operational and logistic aspect. And then there's the personal aspect, which is just making sure that, you know, we've always been a community space and, you know, just showing a film is one thing, but showing a film and having conversations after and having conversations before. And, you know, I talk to so many folks who they have their Frameline traditions of who they sit by and who they line up with. And so, you know, I think we're trying to hit it in all ways. We're trying to be sure that we're covering logistics of safety and following protocols. And then we're also just remembering that this is a community event and that, you know, our idea, the reason we've been successful for 40 years is you show the art and then you show the art and you discuss it and you use it to impact your perspectives. And, you know, you look outside of your geographic area or, you know, your letter, as we would say, you don't just look at the, if you're a lesbian, you don't go to lesbian films only. You kind of look outside of your little radar. You watch films from 25 different countries that are playing at this year's festival. And then you're able to have these broader conversations. So, yeah.
And tonight is opening night for Frameline, and there will be an honoring of the victims of the Orlando shooting before the opening night film in San Francisco at the Castro Theater at 7 o'clock. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. That is Alexis Whitman, Director of Distribution and Educational Programming for Frameline. Alexis curated the Coming Up Queer Shorts program this year. 5 shorts will be showing on Sunday, June 19th, 1 o'clock at the Rock. We're also joined by Joey Gonzalez-Ruiz, works at Out Loud, a project of Youth Radio. Joey identifies as a trans Latino guy working to build a safer community for queer youth in Oakland. And Jimmy Zhang was raised in the Bayview, recently graduated from UC Berkeley, and now works for the school district as a community health outreach worker at Burton High. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about the conversations around the Orlando shootings? And what is happening in June with Gay Pride Month? What do you think is missing from the conversation? Where do you think it should go from here? Where do you want more focus to be? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you have any questions for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. If you have personal experiences, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Joey, can you talk about the significance of Pride Month with the shooting? And then also, hours after that rampage, Santa Monica police arrested a man who allegedly had a car full of guns, ammo, and bomb-making materials who was on his way to Pride in L.A. They thought about canceling the event, and they said, no, it has to go on. We'll just heighten security.
For me personally, Pride is our – June is our month. June is the month where we can feel proud of ourselves. We can express ourselves in public. We don't have to feel afraid. That's kind of what pride is in general, is not being afraid of who you are. And the fact that because of the shooting and because of this guy in Santa Monica who was caught, we feel afraid to go out to our spaces like this is our month and it's being taken away from us. It's been almost 1 year since gay marriage has been legalized. And people think, you know, that's the end of the gay rights movement. We don't have to focus on this anymore. And yet, this Sunday, this tragedy happened, and another tragedy almost happened. So we need to think about, you know, what is there for the LGBT community? What more work do we have to do for the LGBT community?
And talk about the young people you work with, because you work to build a safer community for queer youth in Oakland, and you work with children. You work in middle schools, and you work with some kids who are out and some kids who aren't. Can you talk about what you're hearing from them right now?
I definitely feel like it's been much more positive for the LGBT community since when I was in middle school. I visited my old middle school and done workshops educating, you know, what does each letter in the acronym mean? Like, what would you do if your family member or your friend came out to you as a member of the community? And there's been so much more positive attitudes towards it that it's shocking to me. It was kind of like a slap in the face to hear that someone went and committed this. And it makes me afraid, personally speaking. It makes me afraid of, like, you know, can I come out to my job and feel safe? I don't pass as a man. I look like a stereotypical lesbian woman. If someone sees me and looks at me and thinks I'm a queer, you know, what hopes do I have?
Have you had many experiences like that?
I have had some experiences like that where I felt threatened because of the way that I looked. I've been, you know, called the dyke, just harassed on the streets.
Mm.
And I don't want that for my friends. I don't want that for the kids I work with. I want them to feel happy about themselves. I want them to feel proud of themselves.
Do the teachers, the school districts invite you in to speak to the kids? How does that work?
Yes, they do. I work in La Clinica de la Raza as a part of the Casa Che program, which is basically peer health education. And so I work in educating with the LGBT community. So we get invites from teachers saying, you know, we want to hold a workshop on the LGBT community. Sometimes we have students that come from Casa Che who request the workshops. Sometimes we have teachers from schools who request the workshops, and we go there and we try our best to educate and to kind of make the students empathize with us, because it's, for some people who aren't educated a lot about the LGBT community, they say things that they don't understand can be very offensive and can be very disrespectful. And we're hoping that with sharing personal stories, like my personal testimony of coming out or testimonies of being allies, that they can work towards a better future, you know?
Jimmy, you support implementing LGBTQ programs at Burton High School. What has your experience been with working with high school and middle school students?
Yeah, so I mainly work in Burton High School. And a lot of my high school students, I see a great need of just having specialized and confidential closed spaces for mainly queer-identified students. So I know that Gay Straight Alliances or Queer Straight Alliances have been around for a long time, but I think there's also a greater need in serving our queer students in my experience and in my work, that Gay Straight Alliances and Queer Straight Alliances are great in creating more visibility for students who identify straight or just students who are getting to know the LGBTQ community. But what about the students who are out and who identify and have to deal with the day-to-day struggles and microaggressions of just being non-conforming or genderqueer or just being out? And so I've noticed that it's important in my work, and also just my relationship with a lot of my queer youth is just dedicating that specialized and confidential space to see them as ever-changing and fluid folks who are navigating this world that we're in.
How do you talk about the shooting with the young people you work with, Jimmy?
Yeah, so I think I haven't had too much conversations because I know that school's out right now and everything, but I know that when I will see them more often, I think it's important to just start from where the eyes, how they see it, from their eyes, from their ears, and how members in their community have been talking about it. And starting from that place, I think that's always important to just center of how that has impacted them. From a handful of young people I did speak with, some youth are saying that they're really numb to it. You know, growing up, they know that there's always going to be this struggle of feeling safe, feeling protected in public for being who they are. And that issue has always been there. And so for something like this to happen, unfortunately for some of my youth, it's like, I already know that this is going to happen, or this is going to explode in this, and just not knowing in what way or form. And I think that's the reality that we're working with, is how do we protect our young people and also queer folks today? Because I think that that fear is there, and it's imminent, and it's always going to be there, but it's just, we don't know in what shape or form. And I think this is just what has happened, that has shown us that this is the capacity that can happen.
What are some of the big issues young people want to talk about today when you go to schools?
Yeah, I think the big issue is the sense of community and belonging, the sense of feeling accepted entirely for who they are, not just parts of them. I think it's also about they may not use this word, and some youth do use this word, but this understanding of intersectionality is so important, is that how does one's race, class, their experiences in society influence their identities and their sense of feeling accepted and sense of feeling place, and ultimately feeling community. And so I think there's a lot of important interpersonal work that needs to happen. As important as visibility is in our community, which is really important, I think it's also equally important to address inherent social emotional health that a lot of our queer folks go through, and especially queer youth, is addressing how do we take care of yourself? How do you take care of yourself in community? And I think it's important to emphasize that self-care can ultimately be a very political act. Yeah.
And it's interesting, Alexis, when you think about the different generations and what they've experienced, what they remember. And a lot of media are reporting on what happened back in 1973 on June 24th, when an arsonist started a fire that raged through a gay bar in New Orleans' French Quarter. 32 people died. They were trapped inside the upstairs lounge. And, I mean, a lot of people are learning about this for the first time because of what happened in Orlando. And at the time, politicians and the media mocked people who died. The churches refused to bury the remains of the victims. Very, very different from what we're dealing with right now. I mean, you even have, we can talk about this later, but politicians who are passing anti-gay legislation and say horrible things about the LGBT community are even expressing sadness about what happened. I mean, that's a different topic, but the point is the reaction is like a 180 from what we saw in 1973.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a lot of what we experience at Frameline, is we put on this huge array of films for the festival over 11 days, and we do it in San Francisco, and we do it in Oakland, we do it in Berkeley, and noticing the differences in, you know, how do we bridge our generations and how do we get folks to understand how much things have changed, and then unfortunately, what remains the same. The incident you're talking about in 1973, you know, there's a documentary on that in this year's festival called Upstairs Inferno, and so that's been programmed for a number of months, and I don't have in front of me when and where that plays. But we have a lot of really great historical documentaries that let people know about these things. When we did one of the programs I manage, Youth in Motion, we send the free queer films with curriculum to queer straight alliances. I remember our 2015 collection, we did the film Vito about Vito Russo, and we were building the curriculum, and we had to write in there, you know, some of the language in this, please mind that this whole thing takes place in the 20th century, so this may be new to you. You know, and when you're sending stuff to youth, they were born in this century, and telling them about what it was like in the 70s or 80s is really hard to convey. And, you know, in the AIDS epidemic, people didn't want to bury people. People had trouble with relations wanting to take their loved ones' bodies. And, you know, these are things that elders in our community know and don't always get expressed. And so this is a good opportunity to kind of talk about those things and talk about what has changed. But, you know, there's the things that are the same, right? Another way to look at this shooting is, yes, we can talk about mass shootings. We can talk about gun control. We can talk about that type of safety. And also, LGBT youth are less safe than other youth statistically. If you look at studies that have been done by GSA Network and by GLSEN, LGBT students are more likely to report missing school due to feeling unsafe, serious consideration of suicide, lower grades, using drugs, drinking, smoking cigarettes, all of those things. And that is statistically true in multiple studies, you know? And so we can talk about LGBT safety in bars and regarding guns, but we also need to talk about what we can do to support youth and make sure that they feel safe all the time. It's not guns that have killed a lot of queer people. It's not guns that have killed a lot of trans people of color, and a lot of Black trans women in particular. So, you know, what do we do for that? What do we do that's non-legislative, that's communal, as teachers, as educators, as adults in the community to support youth?
Mm. And after the break, I'd love to ask you what that looks like in the Bay Area compared to other cities across the country that might not have all of these resources. You mentioned this documentary, Upstairs Inferno. It sounds really amazing. Directed by Robert Kamina. Mm-hmm. And Kamina combines interviews with survivors, some of whom have never spoken out before, with intense archival footage to capture a very specific time and place for LGBT people. And again, on June 24th, 1973, an arsonist started a fire that raged through a gay bar in New Orleans' French Quarter. 32 people died. It was a very different time back then. And this documentary is going to be shown at the Frameline Film Festival Thursday, June 23rd at 9:30 p.m. at the Victoria Theater. And if you can go to frameline.org for more information. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your Call is a better program when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at the show's website. Set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org. Coming up in a half an hour here on KALW, it's the BBC's World Have Your Say. 11 o'clock, half an hour from now, here on 91.7.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be talking about media coverage of the Orlando shootings and the immediate aftermath of the massacre. The shooter's Muslim heritage shifted the media attention to terrorism. So we're going to talk about how that happened and then how that's affected the rest of the reporting. We'll also talk about reporters that are holding politicians accountable, politicians who say they completely support the LGBT community, and yet at the same time, they're passing anti-gay legislation. CNN's Anderson Cooper did this with the Attorney General of Florida. You can easily find the video online. So check it out, and then we're going to talk about it tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are joined by Alexis Whitman, Director of Distribution and Educational Programming for Frameline. Frameline started 40 years ago. It was born out of a political climate that demanded visibility during a time when the LGBT community was made invisible. And Alexis curated the Coming Up Queer Shorts program. You can see it Sunday, June 19th, 1 o'clock at the Roxy in San Francisco. We're also joined by Joey Gonzalez-Ruiz, who works with Out Loud, a project of youth radio. Joey identifies as a trans Latino guy who works to build a safer community for queer youth in Oakland. And Jimmy Zhang was raised in the Bayview, recently graduated from UC Berkeley, and now works for the San Francisco School District as a community health outreach worker at Burton High. Jimmy supports implementing LGBTQ programs at Burton High School. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. We were just talking about different generations. So if you remember some of these events that happened in the 60s and the 70s against the LGBT community, and then you look at what young people are dealing with today, what are your thoughts on what's changed, what hasn't changed? If you identify as an LGBTQ young person and would like to talk about your experience, we'd love to hear from you. And then more generally, what are your thoughts on this conversation that we're having right now? What do you think needs to be added to the media coverage? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Alexis, before the break, you were talking about how you want the conversation to also focus on the other issues that LGBTQ youth are facing: suicide, trans people being harassed on the streets, assaulted on a regular basis. You work with other states and other communities because you try to get films into other places. What does it look like? Does any other place outside the Bay Area stand out for you when it comes to, like, you know, resources that are available, a good dialogue that's happening on the ground?
I mean, I think I wouldn't say that there's one that stands out, but I think that what's interesting is our Youth in Motion program started in 2008 and was only in California until 2014. And so there we noticed strong differences between what was happening in Southern California and Northern California, and then what was happening in Central California, right? So I think it's just region. I mean, it's when we were registering schools, once we nationalized, some states were real quick to jump on. We were able to get a school registered in Illinois or New York very quickly. And then there were states that, I mean, we literally were like, hey, we want to get your school in North Dakota. How do we do that? And we're literally on a call with the one out legislator in North Dakota, asking him who we call to get a school registered, right? So some of it is just that people don't have someone around them. If you talk to older folks in the community, people my age and older, I'm 35, but folks my age and older, you know, so many of their coming out stories involve media, and so many of their coming out stories involve media because they never knew another gay person, another queer person, until they saw someone on TV, in a film. And so I think that we experienced that, and then a lot of us moved to more secure places and moved to places full of queers, and we went to college, or we moved to the Bay Area, and now we get to go to all the events, right? But kids today if you're under 18, you don't have the option to move. And even if you're not, you know, you shouldn't have to move. You should be able to make community where you are. So what we try to do is program films and build curriculum that can work both at San Francisco Unified School District, where they're very used to these conversations about intersectionality and race and class and how those things relate to queer identity, and then also have curriculum and films that you can watch if you're in rural Nebraska and you want to have sort of a 101 screening with the PTA and with the school district to sort of just have the beginning conversation of, you have a 7-year-old, they are figuring out their gender identity. How do we assist them with just listening to them on what pronoun they would like and whether they want to wear a skirt one day and jeans the next day? And so I think it's less about knowing where exactly people are struggling and making sure that you're providing resources and opportunities for dialogue that work across a broad spectrum of experiences, because it's a big country with a lot of different things going
with
on.
With a lot, exactly. A lot of different things. And Joey, these issues are getting a lot more attention in the media: bullying, suicide, homelessness, greater disparities for trans youth. What are your thoughts about, I mean, you're 18, you're young, but what are your thoughts about how that attention changes attitudes or changes the ability to come out, for example?
I definitely feel when situations like these, it's like media can be both a blessing and a curse. Because if you're in somewhere like the rural Midwest, you don't have much options for you. So you go on Tumblr, you go on Facebook, you go on Twitter, and you find people, you find community online that can show you, you know, what does it mean to be LGBT? And while they're not right next to you, they're not in your same city, they can teach you, you know, they can show you the way, they can show you, you know, safety. I see a lot of safety tips for trans men on how to bind, on trans women on how to pass. And yet also, you don't know who these people are. They can be people way older than you talking to underage kids, and it's like, how can we keep them safe from unsupportive things? And I don't want to say this. I don't want my words to be misinterpreted and saying, you know, there's a bunch of people preying on underage kids. But it is a situation, it is a problem in the LGBT community where people are preying on underage kids. And so that's why I find media both as a blessing and a curse. Because while you are learning about the LGBT community, you are finding communities where you can feel safe online, there's also people who don't have your best interest in mind.
And I'm sure that gets a lot of attention amongst the LGBTQ community to let people know that this could happen.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also the fact that even in areas like the Bay Area, where it's a lot of, you know, queer-friendly spaces, a lot of these spaces are for adults. So bars, clubs, mm-hmm. like, you know, what are our spaces for underage kids if you're under 21, if you're under 18? Like, we do have a problem in the LGBT community where kids are drinking underage, kids are smoking underage, because that's all we know. That's what's been safe for the LGBT community for such a long time. We don't have a lot of spaces for youth where they can feel safe. So that's another problem that I think, even in spaces like Oakland and San Francisco, we need more spaces for kids where they are exposed to these types of substances and they can also talk about themselves and meet other people.
Jimmy, what would you add to that? And do you see that happening with the youth that you work with?
Yeah, I think that is what Joey touched on was really spot on. It's that, one, we don't have a lot of spaces for young people to navigate some of these conversations, these understandings of the older LGBTQ community and what is safe for them. So I think that highlights just some of the work that's happening throughout a lot of high schools in San Francisco Unified School District. We're having our queer group curriculum that me and other handful of community health outreach workers and people in the district are working on, is having this close, confidential, intimate group that goes on for a whole semester, a whole year, and working within the confines of the school to be able to facilitate some of these conversations and these understandings of navigating relationships, navigating relationships online, navigating coming out, self-care, mental health, and emotional well-being, and all these things that the list can go on. So I think that's just some of the next push that I see in what's happening in our school district, is just having a more specialized and closed group type of strategy and model to reach out to our students, and balancing that with the work that's already happening in our GSAs, QSAs, and I think those two dynamics of the visibility piece is important, and it needs to work also with the more intimate piece too.
And let's talk about the power of film and what happens when you send out some of these films to rural Oklahoma. I remember I went on a road trip in 2005, and I'll never forget this. I think it was in Tulsa, and I ran into a safe space for young LGBTQ kids who were being thrown out of their families because their parents didn't accept them. And I mean, it was just an amazing place. I mean, these things exist across the country. But what happens when you send these films to these places? Like, for example, Alexis, you curated the Coming Up Queer Shorts program, and the five short films in the Coming Up Queer program touch on such a range of experiences. So you've got Pink Boy, a story about love between a butch mom and her feminine son. Swirl responds to bullying with a dance of joy when two handsome outcasts find each other in solidarity. The short documentary Becoming Johanna follows a 16-year-old transgender Latina struggling with school and a mom who prays for her to become someone else. First off, tell us about some of these shorts that you looked at. What was there an overall theme? What stood out for you?
Yeah, I mean, curating shorts programs is fun, but it's a big thing to take on. You know, we don't create any content at Frameline. We only exhibit content, so we just receive what filmmakers are making, and then we figure out how to put it all together and which ones we want to accept. And so, you know, you want to take the best films and you also want them to work together really well. And you also want them to represent a diversity of experiences. So this is the second year in a row that we've specifically done a youth shorts program, and that we've done one with the idea that it's free. So we've always had a free screening in the morning that's sort of a family film, like bring the little kids and everyone can watch Cinderella or something like that, which is great. And then we thought, well, what are we doing, you know, to make sure that there's something that's free for youth and that they can come to, that's a space. So so that was the idea behind this. And so last year we put together films. This year, I chose these five films. I'd say I looked at 40 or 50 to come up with these five. I think we have 900 films submitted to the festival, and I believe over half of those are short. So there's a lot, but luckily I was able to sort of narrow it down to youth films and then watch them all. And then, you know, we're lucky that there's so much great content out there. I mean, you know, I can't take credit for these films. I just put them all together. The filmmakers made them, and in the case of two films, the documentary subjects let themselves be found for this. And so, yeah, it's been really it's difficult to put them together because you want to represent everything, but it actually gets a little easier every year because I swear content gets better every year. In terms of sending them nationwide, the films that we acquire for our Youth in Motion program and send out can be a little different, but it was actually a somewhat similar collection last year that we sent to schools in our expanding gender collection. So it went to about 900 schools nationwide. And as I mentioned earlier, one film in that collection, Tom Girl, was about a kid named Jake who's 7 and he likes wearing skirts and he likes riding a skateboard and he has long hair and he's a little gender expansive, a little gender nonconforming, and his parents are super supportive. And so that's really great. And that was sort of our first film. And then by the last film in the collection, we had a 22-minute documentary about Black trans men discussing how they get perceived when they pass as Black trans men. They pass as Black cisgendered men and how they get perceived as Black males in society, right? And so that's a much meatier conversation. But we like to respect the youth. I mean, what we find when we send these things out is that youth are ready for these conversations. Youth are talking about these things that they have the internet. Like, they know all the things happening. And so when I'm looking at youth films, I'm not just going to program things that don't have swearing, that don't have, sexual situations or don't have thoughts of suicide, because that's not what kids are actually experiencing. So, you know, I think that because we send because we work in queer space and because we send our film to gay straight alliances and QSAs rather than to the administrator level, we're able to kind of get away with not having everything be super sanitized. And we want people to have the real conversations of what youth need. Because if you just talk to them about, like, let's all hold hands and be friends, it's not going to be super impactful for them.
And again, the shorts program Coming Up Queer airs Sunday, June 19th, 1 o'clock at the Roxy. But I understand because it's free, tickets are going fast.
They are going fast, yeah. And you know, you can do a search on our website for other films that have similar themes. We have a lot of great feature-length documentaries this year that touch on similar themes. So Growing Up Coy is one about a 6-year-old trying to get bathroom privileges in Colorado. And she was featured heavily in the news a couple years ago. And that plays Saturday, the 25th, at the Castro.
A 6-year-old trying to get bathroom privileges?
Yeah, it was, you know, this couple has a daughter who, you know, she's female identified. She knows she's a girl. And the school was allowing her to use the nurse's room restroom, but not the girl's room. And they just said, that's not fair, you know, and legally they had the standing to do that. And so, you know, they fight for it. And that's a great thing about documentaries, right? It's not just an article that tells you this is what they fought for and this is how it works legally. You get to know the family. And so we have a lot of films that sort of touch upon similar themes throughout the festival.
That is Alexis Whitman. Alexis curated the Coming Up Queer Shorts program. Alexis is Director of Distribution and Educational Programming for Frameline. The opening night event is happening tonight, and the film is Kiki?
Yes,
and
Kiki.
And so tonight that's at 7 at the Castro Theater, and there will be they will honor the victims of the Orlando shooting before the opening night film tonight. What's Kiki about?
So I haven't actually seen Kiki, but it is a it played Sundance. It did really, you know, really fabulous film. And it is sort of a follow-up documentary to Paris is Burning. So it's about the ball scene and about queer youth of color finding chosen family in New York and then dance and, you know, the birth of voguing and all that. And so it's supposed to be really phenomenal. I'm very excited for it. And I think there's still tickets for tonight. But the great thing is there's additional screening in the East Bay next week as well. So that's, you know, that's what I mean when I talk about we have films with youth, that it's not just, you know, it's not always the little 12-year-old with the parents that are nice. It's like, you know, you are a queer person of color in New York, and you have to find your own family, and you're going to build it through the ball scene in your house, and you're going to make your way through chosen family, which a lot of LGBTQ people have done forever.
And that's tonight at the Castro at 7 o'clock in San Francisco. If you go to frameline.org, you can see all of the films and the screenings. We're also joined today by Joey Gonzalez-Ruiz, Joey works with Out Loud, a project of youth radio. Joey identifies as a trans Latino guy who works to build a safer community for queer youth in Oakland. And Jimmy Zhang was raised in the Bayview, now works for the San Francisco School District as a community health outreach worker at Burton High. Jimmy supports implementing LGBTQ programs at Burton High. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you have any personal stories to share, if you'd like to talk about what's happening right now with the Orlando shooting, the conversation that you're hearing, what you think needs to be added to it, if you have any personal experiences, we'd love to take you before we have to end today. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go to Ruby in Richmond. Hi, Ruby. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to say that I'm the mother of a trans gay young man, and we've had many years of having having that status. And what's really important is this is for parents, to respect your kids, to listen to your kids, and there are organizations that parents can turn to. For example, genderspectrum.org is their website. Gender Spectrum is an organization here in the East Bay. They have a conference coming up in July. The conference is wonderful. If you have a trans kid as young as 2 or 3 or as old as a teenager, it's a great conference. There's lots of resources there, and there's activities and things for the kids to do. So it's genderspectrum.org. Also, PFLAG, both national, and there's San Francisco and Oakland and Marin County and other lots of locals. You can go to PFLAG meetings. There are more and more parents, trans kids, who are coming to the meetings, and it's really good to meet up with other parents and just to learn how to be a good parent. I have tickets to a Frameline show that I plan on seeing that was done by a friend of ours that I met through PFLAG, and I go to meetings, and I think parents should be involved in a very positive way.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Ruby. Joey, go ahead.
I would also like to add, for the Latinx parents, there is a program that is called Somos Familia, which is essentially the same as PFLAG, where you meet other parents of trans or queer kids, and you get support from each other. And they meet, like, I'm not exactly sure. I'm not really part of Somos Familia. I know that they're a great organization. Mm-hmm. And if you ever need support in Spanish, that's definitely the place that you should go to.
And Joey, what other advice would you give to parents and family members?
Definitely listen to your children. I know that it's very hard. When you have a child, you already have their future planned for them, and you know exactly, in your head, you know exactly how you want their lives to be. You don't ever want to think about how your kid's life is probably going to be a lot harder than other people's. But please listen to your children. Don't ever make them feel ashamed or scared to tell you anything.
What has been the transformation in your family?
It was definitely difficult at first because, you know, my mother had 2 daughters, and all of a sudden, one of them is her son now. And it's a very difficult concept to grasp, especially if there's been almost no education about the LGBT community in your family. So it was definitely difficult in the beginning. It's been much easier now, though. We have more conversations about it, and, you know, I know that my mom loves me and supports me, and she makes sure that I know that.
And you do this work. I mean, this is your work now. You are working to build a safer community for queer youth in Oakland. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, why did you decide to take that route and work with younger people about these issues?
Well, I started my career in high school, actually. I went to MetWest High School in Oakland, which is basically a public school where, instead of going to school all 5 days of the week, every Tuesday and Thursday, you pick an internship in whatever field that you're interested in. And I decided to go to the Pacific Center for Human Growth and Development in Berkeley, which is an LGBT center that offers counseling and peer groups. And one of the things that we would do at the Pacific Center was speakers bureaus, where we'd go to the schools in Berkeley and do this type of work. And when I graduated from high school, I didn't have a lot going on for me at the time. So I found out about La Clinica had a similar program called Juntos, which is the program that I'm in right now. And I just love doing what I do. I love the kids, the reactions I get from the kids, the support that I get from them. And also, it's so important to me for the younger generation to know about that it's okay, because that's something I didn't have when I was growing up. Mm. In Oakland, I didn't have someone tell me that it was okay that I felt this way, that I felt that I wasn't a woman. And it made me so confused, and I don't want someone to feel confused and like they're alone. I want them to know that it's okay. I want to be the person that I didn't have when I was growing up. So that's why it's important to me.
And Joey, where do you want this conversation to go from here, now that the spotlight is on these issues?
Again, it's definitely about respecting others, regardless of what their race is, what their sexual orientation, what their gender. It's about respecting your peers. It's always been about respecting your peers. It's not just about tolerance. Tolerance is not going to get us anywhere. It's about respecting the decisions or the lifestyle or whatever, the identities of your peers.
And Jimmy, 30 seconds, where would you like this conversation to go?
Yeah, I think it's just coming from a place of listening, coming from a place of observation and giving space and voice for the people who are affected most by this situation and who are growing up queer, who are navigating queerness and these complexities of family, place, home, everything.
Jimmy Zhang was raised in the Bayview and works with LGBTQ youth at Burton High School. Joey Gonzalez-Ruiz works with Out Loud, a project of youth radio. And Alexis Whitman is director of distribution and educational programming for Frameline. The Frameline Film Festival runs through June 26th. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. The festival will honor the victims of the Orlando shooting before tonight's opening night film, Kiki, at the Castro Theater in San Francisco at 7 o'clock. Alexis, Joey, and Jimmy, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the Orlando shootings. In the immediate aftermath of the massacre, the shooter's Muslim heritage shifted media attention to terrorism. So how are the media reporting on the history of homophobia in the U.S., the rise of Islamophobia, gun control, and the root causes of mass shootings? Where have you seen the best reporting? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.